If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to Baptize Me.
The latest release from Robert Randolph and the Family Band, Brighter Days, is a wonderfully full record. Not just with songs, but with inspiration, faith, and terrific musicianship. Robert Randolph never fails to deliver incredible performances on pedal steel, and the rest of the fam is equal to the task. We caught up with Robert, who we've chatted with before, in another life, and it was just like old times. He is an incredible musician, but an even better person. Our conversation started when I asked Robert about inviting super producer Dave Cobb in to help produce this latest release.
He was a guy who really, you know, I studied a lot of the records that he was making with Jason Isbell and Randy Carlyle and a bunch of different bands that he was doing. And he's really all about sound, you know, making the record sound great, getting great vocals, and really just being one that writes good songs that are not trying to sound like something that's of today and popular and too much, you know, just something that's good and that'll kind of be timeless, you know. And actually, as I talk to him more and more, come to find out that, you know, he had grew up in the Pentecostal church down in Georgia. So not only was he Pentecostal church guy, he also was a fan of all of that old Southern rock stuff, and really kind of how it all crossed together between Allman Brothers and a lot of those bands in those, and you know, in the 60s and the 70s, you know, kind of how it all bridged, you know, together. Because, you know, that's one thing with gospel music and blues and rock and roll, it all became one, you know. It's really kind of different words, and everybody was influencing each other in the 60s and 70s and so forth. So that was one of the reasons why I really chose him, you know. It's because I really like to write songs and do different things that are timeless, but it's also inspirational, but makes you want to dance, you know. But sometimes people, when you're working with different people, they can be like, well, I don't know, man, you know, it kind of sounds too inspirational. I don't know if you want to write those lyrics and this and that. You might want to get a little more, you know, sexy or this and that. I'm like, well, it's sexy to be inspired.
Yes.
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, church music, I think, continues to be the inspiration for your music. And that doesn't mean that there aren't secular overtones, but the first three songs on the record certainly exemplify that. Baptize Me, Don't Fight It, and Simple Man. Having said that, they could easily be crossover songs into the secular world, and are. I mean, they are universal messages. We don't always have to make everything sexy and inappropriate for them to have universal messages, right?
Well, I mean, when you look at, you know, like I said, sometimes, you know, the question was asked to me the other day, you know, if you were giving advice to younger bands, what would you tell them to listen to? And I answered and said I would have all younger bands go back and listen to, you know, beginning of roots blues, beginning of roots gospel and rock music, because that was a time where it was sort of stripped down. You get the beginning of these riffs and these lyrics, and, you know, you just, you know, your mind begins to wonder and to think, because don't forget, some of those records was recorded in the 40s and the 50s, and then it inspired guys in the 60s and the 70s, and that's was always the library, you know, and then it inspired guys in the 70s and 80s. So, and if you look at a band like, let's say Led Zeppelin, created a whole catalog of all of that stuff, right?
Right.
And it's very relevant today. So did the Beatles, so did Elvis, you know, Johnny Cash, so did many Hendrix, many people. You know, Hendrix would listen to Bob Dylan, Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, all these different guys at the time, and that was sort of the library, you know. So when you do that, then you can create any other sounds and any other kind of current messages, but those themes, like Zeppelin did, you know, many of those songs were gospel songs.
Right.
Many of them was old, very much blues songs, so that they've taken, you know. You know, when you got to... Nobody's Fault But Mine, you know, that's really a gospel song, you know? So, you know, those are the things that, to me, music is all really one, you know? I mean, there's all these labels, like the term gospel means good word, but sometimes we've put gospel in with, you know, just praising the Lord all the time and all of these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're giving the good word, you know, to inspire, which is what I live for, to bring happiness, peace, and love to people, you know, all over the world. That's sort of like my musical message, my theme, you know?
Right.
So that's really what, to me, how it all is. So, and when writing these songs and recording this record with Dave Cobb, like songs like Baptize Me and Don't Fight It, you know, we both understand how we both come from a Pentecostal background, but also that the listener can listen to them and understand what the overall message is, you know? Because sometimes you could say, you know, I've written songs in the past that people go, well, I don't know what to do with this song. I don't know if we can get it on the radio because it sounds a little too gospel-y. And it's like, oh, well, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you, but yeah. And when you think about it, there's so many music artists, you know, like especially black music artists, right? And there's been some white ones. You look at like come to mind, like the Kings of Leon. They all grew up in a Pentecostal church in the South, too.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at most black artists, you know, probably in the last 30, 40 years, I would probably say 70% of all of us grew up playing music in church. All of the ones that sort of went mainstream, because that's really the place to where music is. That's where you go and you can practice 3-4 days a week. You've got all these church services. You've got all these things. You constantly plan, most of us are constantly put in front of an audience every, you know, 2-3 times a week for hours at a time. So that's really where we would get our, as they would say in these days, artist development, you know?
Right.
So when you go all the way, you can go back from, you know, Sister Rosetta Tharpe to, I mean, so many people, Blind Lemon Jefferson to Aretha Franklin, to Al Green, to Marvin Gaye, to Sly and the Family Stone, James Brown, all these people, Sam Cooke, Beyonce, I mean, I could keep going on and on, Kanye West, all these people, man, grew up in church, around the church, and that's just something you can, you know, if you're a true artist, you can never really get away from it as much as somebody try to get you away from that sort of, when I say get away from it, I mean like that sort of like being rooted and grounded and trying to spread love and happiness and having that overall sense of sort of professionalism, I would say, you know. So, I mean, so for me in making this record with Dave Cobb, it was really like sort of the perfect pairing for this particular time, you know.
It's interesting that you mentioned Kanye, because Kanye now is all about, you know, doing his gatherings on Sunday morning. And he said recently that he wants to go back to making church music. So, you know, he's going back to his roots in many ways. Not that he necessarily ever abandoned them, but now he's putting that label back on kind of the work that he wants to do. It's really interesting how it's come full circle.
Well, I mean, sometimes when you, and I tell people this all the time, it's like, you know, yeah, you know, many people can turn their back on you and all that, but, you know, for some reason, some way, somehow, right, you could always come back to your church gospel roots, because, you know, that's really where most of us get, you know, your values and morals, and for the most part, most people in a church mean good and try to do good. And don't forget, you know, the churches over the years have become sort of these bad examples of things now, you know. And so it's really, and I was talking to somebody the other day, I was talking to actually a bunch of old church folks, and they were like, you know, kind of complaining about Kanye, complaining. I said, look, if you look at Kanye's following, it's all young people, right? It's all these young people. It's a new, I said, nothing in the world changed from old people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Old people are not going to go out on a limb. Old people are going to wake up and they're going to just say, well, I'm going to just do my time and I'm going to just, you know, things ain't the way they used to be. That's what old people say. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But social media, cell phones wasn't created by old people. You know? You know, new ways to make music wasn't created by old people. You know, and that's just one of the things about the good thing about life, you know, is, you know, the young are innovative and the old have, the older are a little wiser and kind of a little just slower and think things at a slower pace. And some of them will be more complacent and just more comfortable and who they already are. So they're never going to change. You know, young people are the ones interested in change and changing the world, you know. And when I gave, for example, look, the new phase of what you would call church happened in the 60s. When you had the Beatles, you know, in the 70s, 60s, late 60s, 70s, you had the Beatles and Hendrix and Stones and the Staples Singers and all of these mainstream pop rock artists, James Brown, you know, decided to make music to help change the world. That's what helped change the world. It wasn't nothing else. Right. You know, they created all of their, the Grateful Dead, all of these bands had their own followings of, here's how we're going to change the world. So that, to me, is what church is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what became the new norm and the new way or the better way, you know? So all those things collectively, Bob Dylan, same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's less about the institution and more about the message probably than anything else, right?
Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, you know, we all get caught up in the institution, and that's with everything, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's just sort of one of the trickeries of the world. But so it's really, to me, it's up to us music artists, musicians, singers, songwriters to help sort of continue and carry on that legacy if you want good. I mean, some people don't want good. Some people want to talk about the evil, depression, and so forth, and this and that. And I was like, hey, that's what you want to do. I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know?
The other thing that certainly keeps you grounded, and you're fortunate to play with the family. I mean, Marcus and Lanisha, their family. And how important is their involvement in the band's sound overall and the purpose of the band, having family so involved in what you're doing?
Well, yeah. I mean, what the purpose of it all and you know, because we all collectively grew up together. So whenever we all trying to channel something, you know, we would take the elements of, let's say if we're trying to, you know, take a pop staple song. And it's funny because the three of us actually all kind of listen to different music. You know, I'm much more like the hard rock blues guy. You know, they're more sort of like R&B, soul, you know, kind of, what's the name? And so collectively, once we kind of sit down and write or rehearse something, you know, it kind of all comes together because we all sort of related in the roots of kind of our gospel, Pentecostal church sound. You know, mm-hmm. As difficult as it is to explain it, it's kind of like, you know, it's almost sort of relative to Sly and the Family Stone, or just, you know, relative to that, you know, yeah. Or a relative sort of, you know, Jimi Hendrix, you know, saying to himself, like, people used to ask him, he's like, well, what are you, you know, man, we love this, like, sort of new style of music. He's just like, well, I'm just playing the blues. For him, he was just playing the blues, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because don't forget, they tried to force him down this R&B lane and all of these other things, the backup guitarist, you know, and all of this stuff. And then he was like, listen, I just want to make music the way I hear it and the way I do it, and that'll be that, you know? And that was certainly that.
The other element that is crucial to this discussion is your playing of pedal steel or sacred steel, and its immediate reference to gospel, but the way in which you play it, and I could be wrong, isn't the way it's played in church necessarily. It is much more aligned to people like Jimi Hendrix or Sly or the way other people play guitar or even that instrument, the pedal steel. How important is it to play that instrument as opposed to guitar for this band? And I know that you play guitar, and I know that you dabble in dobro and other things, but at the end of the day, you're sitting down at that desk and you're making amazing music and you're channeling whatever you're channeling. That's an important element to this as well, right?
Yeah, you know, because for me, you know, anything I do, you know, it's sort of rooted and grounded in sort of my history of church, which is the sort of the, you know, it's sort of been uncovered now for the most part, the story of how it's sort of relative to the Buena Vista Social Club story, because, you know, in those days, you know, guys weren't able to, you know, all of my sort of pedal steel, sacred steel forefathers were never allowed to leave the church, you know.
Right.
So they couldn't leave the church and sort of share their talents with the world. And these were some of the greatest musicians, you know, the greatest lap steel, pedal steel players that I saw growing up. But the world never gets to see them. So, you know, for me to be able to sort of tell that story, have the world hear how those guys influenced me and how I've taken all of the roots of that and sort of my new influences of, well, new sort of old of, you know, kind of meshing it all together with, the, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and kind of Lynyrd Skynyrd and all these different sounds, Jimi Hendrix and Muddy Waters and all these different sounds, kind of bringing all of that to a sort of current, popular, I don't know, I guess, and sort of contribution to music. And you look out there now, there's so many more lap steel, slide, dobro players, pedal steel players, all in these different bands. And, you know, and it's sort of been it's a great feeling to see, you know, kind of the next wave of what this great pedal steel, lap steel instrument is going to become. You know, because, you know, for years it was just the, you know, it's kind of funny because in like the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you know, lap steels, you know, lap steel players were kind of like their own guy. Even went into the 50s, you know, they had like solo artists. After sort of the late 60s, you know, country music started, and then pedal steel and lap steel just became part of like the band sound of country music, you know, yeah. But before that, you had, you know, the Hawaiian music, and then it came over to here. And see, that's really what happened. You know, these lap steels and pedals, these lap steels, you know, were being played all in Hawaii and all of those places. And during the war, many people came back, and it was like, wow, we heard this beautiful sound. How do we do that? And so that inspired this whole new wave of lap steel, pedal steel. And that's really the story of how our church started, you know. These guys, Willie Easton, back in those days, he came back from the war, right, with a lap steel and came back to our church mm-hmm. as a young man. And in those days, the church couldn't afford organs. So he started this tradition to where my great-grandparents, my grandparents, my parents all grew up in my church organization, and I grew up as well. So, you know, that's, for me, it's always for me having people go like, wow, where did that sort of thing come from? And I get to sort of explain the story, you know, how it's approached.
But what you do on that instrument is so different, I would imagine, from what was being played in church in terms of the long solos and the experimentation and the, you know, all the things that you, that's very different from what you were experiencing in church, right? I mean, that takes an artistic mind to be able to work their way around the instrument and play it the way you do.
To be honest with you, like there's some new things that I've added. I mean, I would say in terms of probably becoming a music artist as a songwriter and all that, but literally almost every sound or everything I played, we played in church.
Wow.
You know, seriously, that was, there wasn't like, you know, there wasn't like something like, you know, you listen to like, you know, Robert Johnson and you go, wow, that was cool. But, you know, Jimi Hendrix didn't play like that in church or whatever. But in our church, there was about 8 different guys that all added these different styles and sounds. So, I mean, almost all of the sounds that I played, yeah, I've added some kind of faster picking and some different things and kind of applied it to all the songs. Because in our church, we were just sort of the guitar steel player, you know, not as like a music artist.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I've sort of incorporated some other things and riffs, like trying to play like, because I was heavily inspired by Stevie Ray Vaughan, but literally the same aggression. Actually, we would play more in church than we do at a concert.
Really?
Because church services would be 3 hours to 4 hours long. So what's the singer singing, man? We would have 15, 20 minute jams, you know, 5, 6 times in a service, you know, which was the reason, like when I started out playing, you know, when I first started and came into sort of this music scene of popular music.
You had to tone it down a little bit.
Well, because we would play all of these long jams. You know, we played 30 minute, you know, when you go back to the Mercury Lounge, you're live at the Wetlands, and all that kind of stuff, you know, we were playing some long, long, long jams, and that, 'cause that's all we really knew at the time, you know? We a lot of those songs, if you look at the Live at the Wetlands, really all of those songs and those musical pieces, you know, we grew up playing in church. So that was, you know, and so many songs, even on the next record, you know, that we recorded on Classified, you know, Right Direction, Nobody, Soul Refreshing, you know, those were pieces that we also played in church. So
amazing.
That's kind of all of that sort of just happened like that, you know? You know, it all just sort of came in, you know? And so as time went on, so that's why, for me, it was sort of important to kind of, you know, for this record, kind of get back in with Dave Cobb and kind of really have, you know, really concentrate on what we used to do back in the church, you know, days and all that kind of stuff.
What are there dobro players or pedal steel players that inspire you now when you see somebody like, you know, you're on tour and you're in festivals and stuff, and when you see Jerry Douglas or Anders Beck of Green Sky Bluegrass, are there guys that are playing now that you think, wow, they're pretty impressive and I wish I could do that, or I'm going to try that, or are there tricks that you hear out on the road of players that are impressive to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, you named Jerry Douglas, who's awesome, you know. There's many different guys. I mean, look, Derek Trucks has taken a lot of our riffs that we grew up playing in church, and he's just sort of turned it into sort of his whole world, you know, and taking that on a slide. And there's so many other slide players. I mean,
right.
I mean, even a regular guitar slide players, from Doyle Bramhall to Warren Haynes, all these different guys, we've sort of, you know, they've sort of listened to our music, you know, and kind of taking all of that information and kind of taking it to another level. So it's just so many different pedal steel and lap steel players now that, I mean, you hear it. If you turn on a country music channel, when it just used to be one way of playing pedal steel and lap steel,
yeah.
You know, now you hear sort of all these different influences that sort of I've helped bring to the table, and people kind of taking it. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about music, you know, most of us have the roots of where we all come from, and so we all do that, and we all have, like, our favorite bands or whatever, which we like, and which we try to emulate, but at the end of the day, you know, he or she or me or whoever, we would all sort of sound like each other, ourselves, but we kind of incorporate these new sounds or in our old sounds, and we kind of just all combine them together, you know?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of music, you know?
You're on tour. I mean, this is a key part of the life, is bringing the message and the playing and the spirituality of your... I remember seeing you here in Toronto at the Horseshoe Tavern, and I thought it was probably one of the most spiritual and religious events I had ever been to. And I didn't grow up in church. I went to synagogue as a young man, and we certainly didn't have instruments in our synagogue. But I thought that one night here at the Horseshoe, I mean, the room was sweating, and it was probably one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had in my life. And you get to take that show on the road. How important is that road show for you and taking the show on the road and bringing the message to the people?
It's so important because, you know, a lot of people are depressed and it's a lot of stuff like that going on. A lot of this rhetoric of depression and people are down and social media, what everybody else is doing and I'm not doing, or what we're not doing as a couple and what's not going on. It's just a lot of that going on. So for me, it's always great to uplift people's spirit, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of share with them the background of which I come from, you know, and you know, so it's because a lot of people don't get that, you know, like a lot of people, like I said, and it's mainly because of what I would say, you know, churches have turned into, you know, church. You know, there's many good churches, and then there's so many bad ones that, you know, that people sort of, they look down on you. And the church is the one place, the church building, you know, or the temple or whatever you would call it, the one place mm-hmm. where you're supposed to be uplifted.
Right.
But it has turned into, you know, throughout history, you know, really these last sort of 100 years, it become this sort of judging. Why you're not this way? You only have to be that way. This is the only real way. So for me to be able to write songs, perform songs, be a part of a live sort of music experience that not only are we feeding that to the people, but the people are feeding that, you know, to me and the band as well. You know, so it's sort of this give back, give, take, feed, you know, during the whole point of a show, because, you know, there's many moments that can't be created, which over the years, you know, I'll listen to a live recording. I'm like, man, I didn't know we got into that. How did we get into that? And you're like, oh, man, everybody was just feeling good. It went from this song to this riff to this thing. Mm-hmm. Then we made up a song, and then we added the song, and, you know, and that's the magic of a live experience. So, you know, like I said, you know, as musicians, we all sort of, you know, now you get this whole thing of like, you know, you turn on Instagram or Facebook or whatever thing it is, you're looking at what the other band's doing, you're kind of like, man, how come I'm not doing that? And you yourself sort of get down, you know, and you go, man, looks like they're having a better time. Looks like, man, we're playing a club and they're playing stadiums. How come? And this is all this sort of like, that going on, but at the end of the day, you know, there's millions, hundreds of millions of people that love music all around the world that, you know, and even for me, sometimes I don't understand. I'm like, I just don't really understand how some of these people afford, you know, paying for these concert tickets night after night,
right.
know, things like that. But for those people, you know, that's their church.
Right.
You know, so one concert, they want to get John Mayer. The next concert, they want to get the Grateful Dead. Next day, they want to get Fish. Next day, they want Eric Clapton, Buddy Guy, Carlos Santana. Next day, they want Greta Van Fleet. And that's what it is for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for all of us as music artists to stay original, stay as ourselves, and that's what the fans love.
Right. One Instagram, you are fairly active on Instagram, and some of the things that I love that you do, and I'm sure it's cathartic for you to just mess around at night or try things out, but you spend a lot of time playing, you know, when you're not on the road, playing for people on your Instagram channel and noodling around and playing with different sounds. Is that still for you important too? I mean, building community around your music and building, for lack of a better word, church around your music and what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about sharing with people. I mean, when you look at YouTube. YouTube, okay, changed the whole world, right? Because there was this outlet. And I remember when it first started, people were complaining, you know, and there were all these sort of legal things going on and complaining about this and that, right? I can't believe somebody posted this clip, and I can't believe somebody's doing it, but it's created these moments, right, that now we all can't wait to do something spontaneous and to have some sort of rare footage out there that's not really a part of some TV show or some live taping. It's some B-side or B-footage or some strange thing. And that winds up becoming the most amazing thing that fans like because it's sort of spontaneous, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because what happens is for us, you know, it's kind of like, you know, regular person going to the same job every day. It's kind of like, all right, let me punch in, let me clock in, let me clock out, let me say good morning fakely to everyone, and let me get my, it's just this whole regimen. And so when you're doing a taping or a TV show, a lot of times a recording, there's sort of this sort of pressure, and it's these sort of things settling where you're not so relaxed, can't really improv like you want, you can't really do these things, or you have to follow a certain, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know,
right.
kind of, you know, a thing. So playing music becomes, you know, for me and many folks on Instagram and YouTube and all these different, you know, different clips, it helps move, you know, it just creates these moments in your career. I mean, when you look at YouTube now of all these things that have sort of been released, I mean, when you look at it, look, Hendrix has released probably 8 other records, right? he's been dead of things that people never heard before, right?
Right.
And there's been many others, you know, Tupac, same thing, you know, Biggie Smalls, this thing, that thing, all these folks, right? And nobody knew. They didn't know the tape was rolling. They didn't know it was some thing. It was some footage or some thing from somewhere. And the fans were, wow. You know, man, I didn't know I never really was a fan of the Beatles until I heard this sort of B-side thing. Now I like the Beatles. Let me dig into this. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and one of those things for me, sort of this past year, you know, I was never a fan of Queen until I saw the Queen movie. And I'm like, well, gee, let me start getting the Queen because now I understand, you know, this whole thing, you know, and you started following it, and I'm looking at all these all this different footage and B-sides and all of this and that, and it's like, wow, this is one of the most amazing bands of all time that I had no, I mean, it used to come on in the bar, we are the champions, it's like, right. Turn this off, you know?
Right, that's just scratching the surface.
Well, what happens is, and it's funny because I had this conversation when I first saw the movie with other guitar players, and they were kind of like, and one guy was telling me, he's like, yeah, you wasn't really a fan because it's not really blues, it's not really like, you know, guitar dominant, it's like this music that was created, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when you see how they made the music, what the goal was, what they were thinking, it's one of the greatest stories and sounds in music history. So, hey, like I said, that's become my new discovery. Queen and Bad Company, both those two.
Wow.
Discovered Bad Company, man.
That's amazing. Thanks so much for taking the time and playing with us today. We really appreciate it and continued success. We really do love what you do, and we think that there's a huge opportunity for you to touch people's lives with the music you make. So thank you for doing that as well, and continued success. All right, dude.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
I'm not lying or using hyperbole when I say spending time with Robert Randolph is a thrill. I have seen, as you heard, the man perform live, and each time I have come away full of deep spiritual inspiration. The man can play and will go down as probably one of the top sacred steel players of all time. You'll definitely want to check him out live when you have a chance to get the full measure of what he does. For tour dates and lots of great videos, visit robertrandolph.net. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of Brighter Days. Here is Simple Man.
Simple man, call me a square. I guess I am. They going on to make a mountain down and do their call. Work barking like a dog and making me any kind of mean people shooting in the streets. Madder than hell, I ain't a gonna take no more. Tell you what's wrong in the world today. People done gone and put the Bible away. Living out the law is not the jungle, but the law of the land. Good book said, I know it's true. Nine for an eye and a tooth for a tune. Watch where you're going, remember where you've been. That's the way I see it, I'm a simple man. I am just a simple man, call me a square. I guess I am, hey, going on to make a madden down into their core. Working like a dog and making meat. Any kind of meat and people shooting in the streets. Madder than hell, I ain't the gonna take no more. Tell you what's wrong in the world today. People done gone and put the Bible away. Living out the law is not the jungle, but the law of the land. Good book said, I know it's true. Nine for a nine, a two for a two. Watch where you're going, remember where you've been. That's the way I see it, I'm a simple man.
You've been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.